to tell us, to introduce a presenter and tell us about what we're about to hear here.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's a pleasure to run down here to be with you. And we have a committee that looks much like this. It's in recess right now, and we have members going everywhere. The whole project...
For the record, you're...
Oh, sorry about that. I'm the one who always says that. For the record, this is State Senator Gary George, District 2. We had constituents who contacted me with concerns about special education, and from those constituents' contact, we decided that the best thing to do was to have a hearing. And so, with permission of the chair of interim education, Senator Hartung said, definitely, go ahead and have the hearings. And so we did, and we had a couple hearings dealing with special education. And what happened is the more we heard, the more concerned we became. And I finally decided towards the end that we would actually try to establish a work group to at least deal with a couple of these issues. And what happened was, I believe, a very excellent report and a good minority report. And what we did with that committee is we said we want an open discussion, and I will solicit at this time a minority report. And so I hope each one of you have a chance to look through that report and to glean out what I believe are some real great advice. As you're aware, we've met recently with Superintendent Bunn and had a discussion about what things they might put in motion. And this morning in revenue, we heard presentation of bills that are dealing with a lot of the issues that this work group dealt with. And what I'd like to do right now, I was going to do a presentation talking about what the federal government mandated back in 1974, but I think Sarah will do a much better job of dealing with this than I. And I'm so proud of this work group. When we brought them together, we didn't know what was going to happen, and they were absolutely outstanding. I've never seen a group of people with such diverse viewpoints, with very much passion for their positions, yet have them work together so admirably. So, Sarah, I'll turn it over to you.
My name is Sarah Gelser. I live in Corvallis, Oregon, where I'm the parent of several children, one of whom is a six-year-old who attends Jefferson Elementary School and Garfield Elementary School in a regular kindergarten class in the morning, and in the afternoon he attends an essential life skills classroom. We became involved with special education 6 months after our son was born, and he entered the early intervention program in Benton County. I had the privilege of chairing the work group that Senator George put together, and I would like to again echo what a great experience it was to be a part of this group. It really was a very diverse group of people who had very strong viewpoints and strong feelings about things that didn't always mesh together very well, but the conversations were wonderful. It was a great exercise, I think, in listening and mutual respect, and I was very, very pleased to meet all of the people that we worked with, and I think we came up with some good things. There are two other people here in this room that were on the work group, and I'd like to introduce them. Seth Alford, who is a parent, and Superintendent Steve Johnson also was part of our group. Other members of our group included a special educator, a director of special education, John Lehman, from the Eugene School District. There were several other parents, as well as a parent activist for migrant students. You have before you, I believe, a copy of our report, which you can tell is very lengthy, and I know that you can all read through it. And what I'd like to do is go through and just hit what I think are some of the highlights and special concerns of the report. And I think I'd like to start with a little bit of an introduction. There's a pair of words that I think are very important in our state, and those words are local control. And I know that whenever we start talking about making more rules or more regulations around anything, whether it be transportation or special education, that we begin to worry about things like local control. And I think that that's a very important thing, but I also think that when talking about special education, it's important to remember that the reason that these hearings came to be and the reason that this work group came to pass was that things are not going well in the local school districts. And sometimes if things aren't going well, what's needed is more supervision and more guidance rather than more freedom. And I think sometimes school districts maybe need a little bit more support, a little bit more firm direction, and maybe some more tools. So what you'll hear from me are a lot of recommendations for things that might seem like they may be impeding on local control. I don't really believe that that's true. I think many of these things could be very helpful to districts, to the educators that are working with children every day, and to the families that are working with their school districts. And also just to keep in mind that these proposals were fashioned by a very diverse group of people that did indeed include educators and a special education director as well. And interrupt me at any time that you have questions. In our majority report, we divided our report into about 13 different themes. And the first one was like the big elephant sitting in the middle of the room, which is, of course, adequate funding for special education. And I don't think anybody would oppose the idea of adequate funding, though I know finding money is always an issue. I wish it was easier. I know that we all do. One of our recommendations is that our legislature reexamine the way that funding is allocated to school districts for special education, looking more specifically at how the monies that are directed to special education can be used to meet the needs of students, maybe looking at the ways that some other states direct their special education funding. One of the things that's important in doing this is making sure that there aren't any incentives in a new funding formula which would encourage districts to be placing children always in more restrictive environments. Another recommendation that we had was looking at the way that the funding formula works as it pertains to kindergartners in our system. When a kindergartner enters the education system, they're not for special education. A regular child enters in because they're a half-day student. They receive a half basic allotment. Some children in special education, and my son is one of them, actually attend school all day. So they're there all day, they're drawing from their school district funds for all day, but the districts aren't necessarily being reimbursed for that. And while the student will get that full second basic, they're not getting that full basic funding. And we recommended that the funding formula change so that students that are entering kindergarten from an early childhood special education program go ahead and receive that full first basic funding as well as the full second basic funding. These are kids that have been identified at an early age, so are probably going to be children with more intensive needs that are going to present some more costs to school districts. So to us, it made sense that districts have the support to welcome them into their districts and begin meeting their needs right off the bat. And I also wanted to add a note on language, and I thank Steve Johnson for reminding us of this in our work group. You'll see a phrase in here that's children with intensive needs. A lot of times in discussions about special education, children with complex disabilities become high-cost students, high-cost children, catastrophically disabled children, and those are not very pretty words. And I just encourage folks to think about kids as kids rather than as faces with price tags on the front, that the goal is to meet the needs of kids so that these are, you'll hear me using the phrase kids with intensive needs, which is a phrase I think coined by Mr. Johnson. The last one was that resources to special education should be increased at the state and the federal level in order to meet the requirements the IDEA places upon school districts. And specifically, additional resources need to be allocated so that districts are able to meet the needs of students with some of these intensive needs. Our second area is called appropriate use of public funds. This was one of our proposals that had tremendous support from everyone on our committee. And this was the idea that public monies should not be spent for school districts to hire attorneys to come in and teach them how to avoid providing services to children, how to find loopholes in the law so that they can exclude parents from the special education process. Unfortunately, this is something that happens in our state. The proposal that we submitted, and the wording on this was worked on by a special education director and a parent together, is intended not to limit school districts from training their personnel and their staff about the meaning of the special education law, but more to protect students to be sure that that's appropriate instruction that the school districts are receiving, and that instruction be opened up to parents, so that if there's going to be a training that's done on special education law, that parents will know that training is happening and that they would be allowed to attend that training as well. And of course, this wouldn't be true if it pertained to a specific or ongoing situation within a school district in order to protect confidentiality.
Sarah, mm-hmm. When you're taking that, Mr. Chairman, as you can tell, you don't need me here. you have a person more than competent. Could I be excused back to my committee?
Senator, you're excused.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator George. Thank you. Our next piece is a quality education model. This is another one that is very, very important. This is a very basic draft of some of the pieces that we think would need to go into a quality education model. One of the things that is not in here is looking at what kind of expectations are we having for students in special education in the state of Oregon. How are we looking at having outcomes-based standards for children in special education? We're starting to see that for regular education students when we talk about accountability of school districts, but we don't always have similar accountability measures for children in special education. An example of this would be the statewide report cards. Currently, it's very difficult for progress in special education to be measured by the statewide report cards. If you look at the school that had the most progress this year, that progress was made by exempting the scores of many students, English as a second language students, and students in special education. The problem with that is that not only does that make those students a liability to a school because they can bring down those scores and bring down the report card, it doesn't really provide an incentive for those students to be given top quality instruction so that they can also be reaching their learning goals. I know that there are goals within our state to have more children participating. The opposition to this is not to providing modifications for students with disabilities to be able to participate in testing. Certainly modifications should always be provided if those are what is needed, but the idea of exclusion makes children with special education excluded from the regular education quality education model. It would be great if the regular education quality education model could be expanded to be able to include some of the specific needs of children with special needs. But some of the things that are in there, like a third grade reading benchmark, that's not going to fit for all kids in special education. And it's going to be difficult, I recognize, to determine exactly what these outcomes might be because you're talking about a group of students with a very diverse set of abilities, and that's something that we would recommend needs further investigation. But the hope and the sentiment on the committee was that children in special education also need the benefit of having high expectations placed before them, that the job of special education isn't just to keep kids busy at school or to keep them comfortable at school, but to give them the tools that they need to grow as learners and as citizens and as participants in the state of Oregon. Mr. Chair.
Senator Cordman.
I want to make sure that I heard something you said correctly. Am I to understand that the current quality education model does not adequately address the needs of special education students, in your view?
Yes, in my view.
Thank you.
Okay, correct.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
The topics that we specifically addressed in quality education, in our quality education model, had to do with looking at how school districts are providing staffing and training for their teachers. One of the issues that I heard often, I worked for a while for the Oregon COPE Project, which is our parent training and information center, was from educators and related service providers who are occupational therapists, speech therapists, physical therapists, autism specialists, who would talk about their caseloads being so high that it's very difficult to meet the needs of their students. It can be difficult for a district to determine how many of a particular type of specialist that they need, and there really isn't currently a model that says this is the appropriate number of hours that a speech therapist should have in service each week. This would be having a quality education model that talked about caseload guidelines for special education teachers and related service providers would be similar to the bill that was proposed this week that would limit kindergarten class size to 20. So we are looking at those kinds of things in regular education, and it makes sense that we would look at those types of things in special education as well. I'd like to give an example of this, which would be from my own child. We recently completed a state complaint regarding our son's special education program, and our district was found not in compliance with the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act. And to me, the thing that was most interesting was that we love the people that work with our child, and everyone was working so hard to make this work, and it couldn't happen because the caseloads were so high. And one of the things that I would like to read is an explanation from one of the speech therapists about why the IEP was not able to be implemented. And Her statement was, "The primary reason for mistreatment times and the delay in the implementation of Sam Gelser's IEP are scheduling constraints and a very high caseload." And she went on to talk about how there was not enough time in her week to meet all the children that were assigned to her, and the only way to do it was to stop seeing some of the kids that needed to be seen more often so that she could see all of her children. This was not her fault. She was doing the best that she could. She needed more help and she needed more support. And that's one of the concerns that I have. We have some fantastic things happening in special education in Oregon, primarily because we have fantastic people working in special education in the state of Oregon. But we want to keep them. And one of the ways that we keep people is to support them in the work that they do by placing reasonable demands on them and not overburdening them with caseloads that are impossible to implement. We also had a recommendation for personnel development. A statewide standard should be identified for the training and follow-up on the philosophy and ramifications of IDEA implementation with both regular and special education administrators, teachers, and staff. One of the weaknesses that we found in our work group around special education in Oregon is that there's some missing information. We have a lot of information in our state. It's not always getting to the people that need to have it. And sometimes there's so much information that it's very overwhelming. And what we wanted to see was some way of putting that information together in a meaningful way and getting it to the people that needed to have it. And that isn't always just special education administrators. It's the people that are there every day working with the kids. And that's not just the special education teachers. That's the regular third grade teacher that has three children in her class on an IEP but isn't really sure what her responsibilities are under the federal law as a regular education teacher on an IEP team. It relates to the bus driver who has children with behavior plans on her school bus. It relates to the music teacher who might not understand what some of the accommodations are that need to be made in her classroom. The idea of the statewide standard was to have a way through in-services to be able to provide that information, disseminate that information to people, and then reward them for absorbing that information and using it. We thought that it was very important if a regular education teacher, for example, was attending a lot of in-service trainings on assistive technology that she'd be rewarded with an endorsement on her TSPC license stating that this is a skill that she has. That also lets her school district know that within our district, here's this great resource that we have that can help us when we have a child with assistive technology needs and we don't need to spend a lot of time and money trying to find that person someplace else. I believe our largest section is the accountability and quality assurance piece. This is the part where I think you hear the most from parents. Many parents do not feel like there is accountability for special education and don't feel like there is a way to assure that the services that are provided are of a high quality. The first thing is that there need to be swift and significant consequences for teachers, schools, and districts that violate the provisions of IDEA. There needs to be a way to follow up with those who are repeatedly violating the provisions of IDEA. If an administrator notes that there is a teacher that is consistently not implementing IEPs in his classroom, there needs to be a way to respond to that teacher, to give him opportunities to change, and then provide consequences if that change is not forthcoming.
Mr. Chair. What would be some good examples of areas where or everyday examples where IEPs or a teacher or school district official would be out of compliance with IDEA?
Every student that is in special education, and I brought with me, I didn't have time to stop and make copies. I don't know if everyone's seen an IEP, but this is my son's IEP. Within the IEP are listed the annual goals and objectives. Also are listed are the services summary, the services that are going to be provided to the child. There's a section that talks about the modifications and adaptations that are going to be made. One of the easiest way to explain noncompliance would be if services that are on the IEP are not being provided at all. Accommodations that might be in there. For example, perhaps a student has a vision impairment and needs to have large print materials in the classroom, and the teacher is not providing large print materials to that student. That would be violating the IEP. Many students are on behavior plans where they have challenging behaviors. They have a disability that causes it to be very difficult for them to follow the policies and procedures in a building, and the team works together to create a plan to support that child before he misbehaves rather than after he misbehaves. Many times those pieces, and sometimes it has to do with this training piece. Maybe the PE teacher didn't know that you don't put your hands on the student's shoulders, because if you do that, he's going to kick you in the shin. not following that behavior plan would be not implementing the IEP.
Mr. Chair, just one thought. So what would be, I'm just trying to think through this first bullet point here, what would be and I'll just use the first example of not having the large print,
mm-hmm.
what would be an appropriate, swift, significant consequence for that teacher for not having the large print, which would be a part of the IEP?
Right. Well, I think the first piece would be making sure that there was large print, that perhaps that would result in a meeting with that teacher's supervisor, who would be instructing that person of the importance of following through on the IEP, and just like any other personnel matter, I think it should be consistent with other things, so that if it would be similar to if a teacher was not providing math instruction in the first grade, what would the principal do in that circumstance? I think it should fit in. It shouldn't be different than what it is in regular education, but there needs to be a consequence rather than the idea that the child's on an IEP. This is our goal. We're going to try to make this happen, and if it doesn't, we're just going to work harder next time. If we start out with that standard that it's unacceptable not to implement the IEP, because as Steve Johnson said, the goal should not be compliance with the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act. That should be assumed. That should be the basic floor. The goal should be something higher than that.
Thank you. Proceed.
Thank you, Senator Starr. Another piece that we put in here was that districts need to be encouraged and monitored to be sure that their personnel planning and preparations for the following school year are such that IEP services are ready to begin on the first day of school, rather than taking 3 or 4 or 6 or 8 weeks in order to get things rolling for a student. It really doesn't make sense for special education services to have a slow start and an early end. That takes a significant chunk out of that student's school year. And some of these things I'd like to add aren't really different from what's already required in the law. The law would require that special education services last all year long, but unfortunately that's not always what's happening in our state. Certainly it happens sometimes, and again, there are places and there are great things happening in special education in Oregon, and when we talk about the problems, sometimes it's easy to overlook those, and I just want to state again that there are some wonderful things that are happening in our state, but we're here to talk about some of the places where we can improve. We talked about, we were recommending easing the transition process for students who make major transitions from early childhood special education to elementary school to middle school to high school. These can be major changes in programs, major changes in personnel who are dealing with the student, understanding what some of these modifications and adaptations and specialized instruction are. So there's some recommendations about meetings and preparing for the student to move on. We also talked about having related service providers, and again, these would be occupational therapists, physical therapists, adaptive PE teachers, educational assistants, autism specialists, who are providing specialized, specific services to a child that aren't part of the full school day, documenting when and how those services are being implemented. One of the difficulties for parents is that it's very difficult to be sure that an IEP is being implemented, because your kid can't always tell you whether or not the speech therapist came that week or that day. So for some families, 4 months could go by and they could not realize that perhaps that student wasn't being seen. And the speech therapist might not realize that that student isn't being seen if her caseload is huge and the parent hasn't called to say, how come you haven't been there to see my child in 3 months? Having a way to document that information, having that available to the IEP team leader, having that available to the parents, would provide a built-in safeguard to be sure that services are being provided, and we would be able to catch problems early before they become big problems that are more difficult to overcome later. We also recommended that when educators or related service providers find that for any reason they're not able to implement a student's IEP, that they immediately notify the parent of that child that those services aren't being provided. They notify their special education director, and that immediately the district work on a corrective action plan to figure out how they are going to be making sure that that IEP is implemented, and if compensatory services are needed for services that have been missed, what the plan is for providing those services to that child. We had a recommendation about disclosing conflict of interest within an IEP meeting. So if somebody had a conflicting interest in making a recommendation for a child, they would disclose that. Again, the district should honor out-of-district IEPs. So if a student moves from one school district to another school district, that they move in with that IEP in place and that IEP would be honored. We talked about enforcing child find and improving the ability to identify students early so that they can have early intensive services. And also the importance of providing a true continuum of options for students. Another policy that we talked about at great length, and again, this was worked on by a special educator, parents, and a school district special education director. Throughout the state, there's reports of parents being denied access to their children's special education classroom, that they're told that it's either inappropriate for them to be there or they need to give 48 hours notice that they're going to be there and that their time there might be limited to a period of time. And we felt that it was important to have a visitation policy in effect that protects parents of children in special education, providing them equal access to their school buildings as do their children's peers who are non-disabled, so that just because you have a child in special education doesn't mean that you have lesser access to your school building. It's a pretty detailed visitation policy, and you can read it. One of the things that I liked about it was that it recognized that there are times when it might be inappropriate for a parent to be there. For example, a non-custodial parent, a person that comes in that might cause harm, perhaps they're under the influence. But those are going to be very rare circumstances. And basically what this asks is if a parent comes to a school and they're asked to leave, that they be provided in writing with that reason. That gives parents a little bit of protection. If every time they come, they're told they need to leave because another student is being evaluated or because they're having a special program that day, that if they go every week for 6 weeks and they get that same explanation, you're going to start to see a pattern there that isn't appropriate.
Senator Fisher.
Questions in order?
Yes.
Your visitation policy here, I noticed that the number D, page A30.
Mm-hmm.
Says visitation policy should be standard throughout the state with no individual revisions allowed. And I thought I heard something about local control.
Right. Well, and I'm thank you for asking that question, Senator Fisher. This is one of those places where I had mentioned that local control is a great thing, but sometimes when local control is abused, there needs to be more help and more assistance to that district in meeting their responsibilities. Our school buildings belong to all of us. They're public buildings, they're public classrooms, and parents should be able to have access to them. And the way that it's working right now, it's unfortunate that we need a visitation policy. If school buildings were always and consistently across the state open to parents, then there wouldn't need to be a visitation policy. But this seems to be one of those circumstances where it's warranted to take back a little bit of that control and provide a little bit more supervision so that people do have equal protection and that parents of children with disabilities aren't having less access to their school buildings than parents of children without disabilities, which is in practice what's happening in many parts of our state.
Mr. Chair, I guess I was just a bit surprised because knowing that we have many, 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 many varied situations with classroom locations and probably hours that certain things are taught around the whole state, it would seem pretty impossible for the state and its significant wisdom to be able to answer some of the questions that might crop up, and it looked like this was just flat out final. I could have understood something that said any revisions to this would be okayed or checked out by the state or something, but just a flat statement like that caused me a little concern.
Senator Fisher, one of the things that the visitation policy does not do is talk about specific times of day. It's not that parents across the state should be allowed to visit from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. And there are provisions throughout here recognizing that there are times when it may be inappropriate to have a visitor in the classroom. If there are other adults in the classroom that day, if there is a special program going on, if there is one of the things that we talked about is that for some children it's very upsetting. Changes in routine can be very challenging and disrupt their school day, and we wanted to be sure that we're protecting those children as well. Of course, the overall goal is is providing a quality education for all students. There's a lot of flexibility and leeway within the policy. There's a list of, a pretty long list of reasons for refusing access to the school. And it also talks about if a parent is going to come in and wants to talk with someone, that that's something that there needs to be an appointment for. These are things like coming in to observe, to see, what's going on in the school day, particularly if you're looking at students who are nonverbal, who aren't able to communicate. It's very difficult to be able to find out what your child is doing at school, who your child is sitting near, if your child is comfortable, what kinds of behaviors your child is exhibiting during the school day. And that's why it's important that parents be able to go and visit the classrooms, maybe without providing notice, as other parents do as well.
Thank you. Go ahead.
Thank you, Senator Starr. The next one was a recommendation on assistive technology. The Individuals with Disabilities Education Act requires that assistive technology be considered for students that need assistive technology in order to benefit from a free and appropriate public education. One of the challenges with this is that it can be kind of expensive, that we don't always have a lot of specialists that have knowledge about this. And this recommendation was that every district have on staff or readily available through its ESD such a person that is able to provide technical assistance related to assistive technology and has knowledge about how to obtain these kinds of devices for the students in their district. We have a recommendation about behavior supports, that all children benefit when children in the classroom are able to comply with school rules and policies. The idea, and I mentioned this before in another question, behind behavior supports is supporting the child to maintain good behavior before they move into the negative behaviors. This recommendation recommends that students who exhibit unacceptable behaviors undergo a complete functional behavioral analysis. And this is a type of evaluation that's done to look at why it is that a student misbehaves. What are the kinds of triggers that trigger that misbehavior? And this would help to create behavior plans that would help to prevent that behavior from happening. Dispute resolution. There have been lots of conversations about dispute resolution for special education in our state. One of the recommendations that we had was that a voluntary fact-finding process for due process hearings be established. This was a process for fleshing out when were services provided, when were services missed. That we had someone on our work group that had been through several due process hearings, and he talked about how much time and money is spent in the due process just fleshing out these basic facts. And if there was a way to go through and obtain those facts ahead of time, that could save some time and some money. Another thing that we talked about was the need for more people to understand the use of the mediation process as a method for dispute resolution. We recommended that Oregon Department of Education produce a variety of information materials to inform parents and educators about the process and the potential benefits of the mediation process. We recommended that be made available in a variety of formats so that it could be disseminated to as many people as possible. Again, our group wanted to emphasize that when something does go to a hearing, that due process officers should be competent and impartial, and that ODE should publish a manual on due process so that people that are entering into that process understand what it is, how the rules work, what to expect, how to prepare. And the last one was that formal dispute settlements should not require parents to sign away future legal rights. Another issue that we talked about, it was kind of a strength and a weakness all rolled into one, is that in this state we have a tremendous amount of information from a large number of groups, but the challenge is getting it to the people that need it when they need that information. And we wanted to find ways to make it easier for people to get the information that they needed. One of the things was having the pre-printed material that's handed out to parents at IEP meetings be on the World Wide Web so that parents could have access to blank IEP forms and other kinds of forms that are passed out to them at meetings. That local education associations and local schools would be required to disseminate to parents, educators, and other staff information that is sent to them from the Oregon Department of Education. One of the great mysteries is that there are a lot of training opportunities that come up that not as many people attend as would enjoy them and benefit from them because they don't know. there's a lot of information that's sent out from Department of Ed, and it doesn't always get to where it needs to go. And the last thing was that early intervention, early childhood special ed programs, that there be welcome packets to introduce parents to the special education system. It is a complicated system, and parents sometimes need tools to figure out how it works, where they can turn for more help and assistance. And I recognize that I'm running out of time. I didn't mean to go through everything. parent participation, you can read the recommendations for parent participation that really focus around parents being fully informed, parents being connected to each other. One of them that I think is a very, very easy one is putting that checkbox on the first page of the IEP that allows parents to give permission for their name to be shared with advocacy organizations or other parents. It's very, very difficult to connect up with other parents that have children in special education. And I think that there's great promise there for some unique solutions to problems. I know that my son's site council at his elementary school, there was not enough money for art education there. They have a parent site council. They're all very excited about that. They raise enough money every year to do that and bring in multiple wonderful artists in residence. And they do that through private fundraising. And I wonder if parents of kids in special education have the opportunity to network with one another and put their creative minds together, how some of these other things might be funded and some of these other problems might be solved. But we won't have the opportunity to know that if we keep keeping parents of children in special education away from each other. We talked about, and I wanted to clarify the first recommendation, special education student progress will be based upon objective data collection rather than on subjective teacher observations. This is not to negate the importance of teacher observation or the expertise of teachers in classrooms. This is just to state that the high expectation for a student shouldn't be that they sit quietly through the school day. We should be looking at the meaningful progress that they're making on their schoolwork, just as we do for kids in regular education where we have their behavior and citizenship evaluations as well as their academic evaluations that are looking at how they're progressing on their schoolwork. And we talked about having a clear set of rules and guidelines around what evaluations and reevaluations need to obtain. Under the miscellaneous recommendations, I think that this is the most important recommendation that we have for you today, which is that there needs to be a continued study of the implementation of IDEA in the state of Oregon. It was great to have this opportunity to meet with a wonderful work group for 4 sessions. It's not a lot of time. We had a lot of opportunity to raise many issues that we weren't able to fully resolve and to formulate some ideas here that aren't fully hashed out in terms of what they might look like. For example, Senator Deckard's question of what is a swift and significant consequence, there wasn't time to determine what that might be. But the work group feels that it would be of great benefit to take some significant time to have a variety of people, and this should include people from the Department of Education, it should include many parents, it should include regular and special education teachers that are out there every day, related service providers, and discussions about what's working, what's not, how can we fix it, and how can we do better so that we're meeting the needs of these students that we have. And another one that actually wasn't related to education had to do with the legislature directing health insurance companies to provide equal coverage to people with disabilities so that we wouldn't just be saying we don't cover autism and we don't cover Down syndrome. And that probably doesn't belong in this committee. In the minority report, you'll find the Special Education Bill of Rights, which is very detailed. There's pieces of this that were pulled out and adopted by the whole group into individual recommendations in the other part of the group. And the other piece of the minority report was for special education vouchers, allowing parents to direct the double basic funding to a program of the parent's choice. At this time, do you have any questions?
Mr. Chair?
Next question, Senator Gordley.
Thank you. Thank you very much for all of the energy and the very clear commitment that you and many others have put into this report. Given your last statement about funding for special ed, that's what you talked about in part, Representative Simmons has a bill that I believe addresses funding for special ed and English as a second language. Are you familiar with that bill? Can you speak to us about how your recommendations
relate to the bill? Is the bill something that you're supporting, or are you involved in, are you involved with Representative Simmons in putting that proposal forward?
Senator Gordley, Senator Starr, this is a difficult question, and I need to apologize to my friend Seth here. This is a place where we part opinions, so I speak here for myself and not for the group. I'm not part of Senator Simmons' bill, and I have concerns about Senator Simmons' bill. One of the concerns that I have is that while on the one hand I support the idea of parents, I really support the idea of parents having the ability to have significant input in their children's education and to be able to direct some of those dollars, and I recognize how that does lead to some more accountability for school districts. I don't completely understand how students in special education that this is intended to protect would be protected. Some students for whom the special education process is not working may be these students that have intensive needs, who have programs that are costly, that might be more costly than the twice basic that is provided to them by the state. And I want to make clear that that's not true for all kids. You've got kids that have programs that are very expensive, and you have children who have programs that barely eat into the twice basic at all. That's why the funding doesn't follow the individual student. The idea is that it's supposed to work out overall. But my concern is, and I have one of these students who has an expensive program, if I were to go to my district and say to them, you need to provide a better program or else I'm going to pull my child and take the money he generates with him, they might say, go ahead, take this money, you're going to save us X thousand dollars. And that takes away the incentive for that district to provide those high quality services. For some kids that actually might work out well, because maybe they can find places that can provide those services more expensively. I have a child that has a unique disability, and right now there isn't another place that I could take my $9,000 to take him to. So while this would work for some kids, and I think that there's merit in that idea, and I think that consequences are important, I think that we need to be looking at the whole spectrum of kids and what some of the unintended consequences of a very good idea might be. Thank you.
Anything further? Sarah, this has been a great presentation. You bring it with great enthusiasm, and I do appreciate your intensity and interest, and we'll take these under advisement and stand by.
Great. Thank you, Senator Starr.
Thank you. Any further comments? If not, I propose that we adjourn for the week, and we will reconvene on Tuesday.
And you'll be back on Tuesday?
And I'll be back by then. With a good suntan.
What about you, Wes? Mm-hmm. You were such a teacher.
Mm-hmm. Hi. How are you?
Hi. I'm Fred.
Nice to hear. Yeah.
We may have met each other at the school board meeting.
Mm-hmm.
Hi, Ryan. How are you doing?
I saw your presentation in the day.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks. And read that report, and I'd like to see something coming out.